Make my dream come true. Vote for me, not you. Hello, I'm President Wappler for president. And here's another one of my 10 reasons to vote for President Wappler for president, besides the fact that I changed my first name to president. 1. If elected, I pledge to move the seat of my government to Australia to ensure the survival of our American system in the event of war. And even if there is no war, Australia is a very nice country. 2. My wife, First Lady Wappler, yes, she changed her name too. 3. And I had a wonderful time there, body surfing and rock houndling in 1946. 7. So,
send your cash-only contributions for the President Wappler for President Committee directly to the Firesign Theater, attention overdue Wappler account, and don't delay.
And make them out to double O double P double L double E double R, not pronounced Waffler. Thank you.
Here's news on presidential candidates from the API. Republican presidential candidate Daffy Duck of California is reported unconcerned by his poor showing in the Iowa caucuses and has told reporters that New Hampshire will project him as a frontrunner in that state's primary. Duck, 71, is a retired cartoon figure and kumquat rancher who spent many years as head of the AFIA, the American Federation of Imaginary Animals, in Hollywood, California. He points out that New Hampshire is a heavily unionized area and that he for years enjoyed close ties with AFL-CIO officials in New England. Reporters who have traveled with Duck thus far on the campaign trail report the candidate increasingly anxious. He acts nuts, said Don Henley of the Albuquerque Record recently. Lately, he's been taken to screaming in a kind of high-speed gibberish. It's getting so all you can understand is the lisp. Despite the adverse publicity Duck has encountered because of his campaign antics, including the trashing and dynamiting of his motel in Des Moines and the attempted rape of 3 large human women in Manchester, New Hampshire this week, his staff continues to put out the word that the elderly Republican is not just living on hope, but is confident that New Hampshire is his stepping stone to the presidency.
Good morning and welcome to the Breezy Breeze Show. I'm Breezy Breeze, and our special guest this morning, President George Washington. Welcome to the show, George.
Thank you very much.
Well, why not tell me and our audience just a little bit about yourself?
Very well. I grew up in the colony of Virginia. I did some wilderness exploration, treated with the Indians, and... I was in the war, you know, and naturally, I was very honored to serve the revolution as Supreme Commander. I think the rest is pretty well known.
I'm sure it is. That's right. And yes, according to my notes here, you in the later years were president.
Yes.
But I said that at the beginning. You lived basically in the 18th century, didn't you?
Entirely, yes.
Well, maybe you could enlighten us about those years.
That's very good.
What do you mean?
Your little joke. Age of enlightenment. It was very elegant, I thought.
Well, I guess I missed the point, George, but you are from a former time and all that. Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question that they always ask the Beatles.
You talk to Beatles?
I mean the rock group, George.
Beatle Rock, yes. I once surveyed that bold monument near Plymouth.
George, just exactly what are you here to promote?
It's my birthday.
What are you turning that into a line of greeting cards? No, wait a minute. I tell for that wig you're wearing, you're a designer.
Let
me ask you something, George. I've always wanted to ask a designer, what's your favorite recipe?
Indian pudding, you know, with my teeth.
Oh, that's great, George. Look, hang with us, and we'll be right back.
Every week on the Campaign Chronicles, we get mail. Here's some of a sampling of this week's. In response to our story concerning the George Bush candidacy, listener Oxnard Adroit from San Ildefenso, New Mexico writes,
You people drive me crazy. Can't you get anything straight? The fact that his last name is Bush doesn't mean that he is a Bush. That's pure voodoo. Look, it's so simple.
And here's an interesting viewpoint from Oscar Bergman of Mound, Ohio, about our expose of irregularities in the habits of Ted Kennedy.
You people drive me crazy. What in the hell do Teddy Kennedy's elimination problems have to do with his ability to govern this country? You seem to take everything so literally. Are you simhaffily minded? Is this responsible journalism?
And Morris Chat of Chuck, Louisiana, found our story on minor candidates of a special interest.
You people drive me crazy! How can you take this guy Wap-Lear seriously and give him so much exposure? I mean, if it weren't on radio, you'd be off the air. This is like a bad dream, not spelled double O, double P, double L, double E, double R. It's so simple.
And finally, one Sorrento Cohen of Sacramento, California, had some tough criticisms of our coverage of Governor Regan.
But on the whole, I think your show is really excellent. I particularly enjoyed the piece on George Bush, and indeed noted, as I had not before, that there is a general bushiness about him, indeed a twigginess, if that can be said. As for the Senator Kennedy and the prune story, really top drawer, I thought. Although this fellow Wappler has a lot to say of real interest, too. So pardon me if I criticize too harshly your euphemism, Clairol Head, as applied to Governor Regan. I enjoy your report so much that on second thought, I'll withdraw my complaint and wish you the best of luck.
So, write to us, the Fire Sign Theater, Dayton Heights, California. If you would like a transcript of this broadcast, carefully type out on typing paper an exact copy of everything we've said. And if you make a mistake, start again until you've got it all right, and then mail it to yourself with our compliments.
Good morning. The Fireside Theater is happy to have in the studio today a man named C.A. Green, who is supposedly responsible for a slush fund that, according to this report at least, Mr. Green was responsible for giving $106,000 to George Bush to support his unsuccessful race against Lloyd Bridges for a Senate race, Senate seat in Texas.
Of course, no. I didn't know it was going to be unsuccessful at the time. I don't know if I'd have given him the money.
Who does, yes. Now, would you tell me who got you interested in Republican politics, Mr. Green?
Oh, just call me Cash for short. Because I'm not.
Okay.
Look at this one,
Cash.
Huh?
Yes.
Well, you see, I was living in this palatial townhouse in Washington, D.C., and one day I went down into my basement for a bottle of apricot wine or something, mm-hmm. and I discovered these three Republican bigwigs had moved in.
All right. Well, now how did you recognize that they were bigwigs?
Well, they had on these big wigs and these false noses. Mm-hmm. I think it was to keep warm. I don't heat the basement. It's not efficient, you
That's
know.
Very good of you. How did they get down there without your knowing it, however?
Well, I think President Nixon let them in. He has a key to every basement in Washington. It goes with the job.
Well, what happened?
Well, anyway, these three guys were named Gleason, Kalmbach, and Dent, mm-hmm. and they were down in the boiler room collecting money over the telephone, which I thought was pretty impressive and a pretty swift way to make a living.
Well, was this a secret fund that they were collecting for?
Well, they wouldn't tell me. They said it was a secret. But they were having a lot of fun, and every now and then a Western Union delivery boy would pop in the basement door and deliver them a bunch of money orders. And they didn't tip them, though, because they said it was against the election campaign laws.
Uh-huh.
Then they asked me if I'd like to talk with the president. I said, sure, I mean, that's a real honor. So they made this call, and sure enough, I get this call back right away. It was collect for $50,000.
Really? And he collected?
Oh, sure, he's the president.
Yes. Well, what did he say?
Well, he said, keep up the good work. I told him I wasn't doing any work, and that really pleased him because he said if I wasn't doing any work, that means I was independently wealthy, and he said that was the kind of people he liked to talk to.
All right. Now, how did Bush get into this picture?
Well, it seemed that Bush was one of the president's favorites.
Because of his politics?
No, because his name was real easy to pronounce.
Bush.
See, the president hates names that are hard to pronounce. That's really why he split with that guy Ehrlichman and Haldeman and that guy Gordon Strangning or the one with the real unpronounceable name.
It's hard to spell, too.
But the president was an imp about it. He used to purposely mispronounce George's name sometime and call him Bush and then rhyme it with slush to remind him where he got his money.
Have you been a Republican contributor since then?
No, I gave up on the Republicans. I mean, they left my basement so messy with all that slush and empty money order forms. I figured they weren't neat enough to clean up the country.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Cash.
Just call me Moneybags. Would you
money
like
bags.
Some? Look, I got plenty left, you know.
Let's step outside.
Insurance.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is Jimmy Clicker's Hollywood Political File. The best and the fastest, and you know what I'm going to say before I say it. Brought to you tonight by Newt Oil. The oil of newts is now the oil all over you. Page one, headline. Big headline. Well, you heard the news about how the hopeful Republican, you know, the one in show business, the one with the strange haircut, and I do mean Daffy Duck, about how Duck's repeated moonings over 17-year-old campaign workers, buxom pubescent campaign workers, I drift off here, page two. You read it, but did you know that one of those girls was 14 and caught with Duck in an after-hours tire chain joint in Manchester, New Hampshire, swigging pina coladas and screaming, wahoo, 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 yada, 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 yada. To be continued. Well, you know, with Johnson's newt oil, newly extracted newt oil from new newts, slides on your dry body like a newt might slide over another two or three newts on a wet night in the burbling underthickets of some tropical hell. If that's you, it could be you, and it could be you tonight. That's Johnson's Newt Oil, the new newt oil of newts. Get some. Page three, follow-up. When you check into this story, everything does not wash clean. The girl later found pregnant, the egg, the too quick birth, the somehow in time for the pre-primary late additions, the false rumors, the three-fingered child, the so-called three-picture deal, the denial by Disney officials, all of it. Well, it's now past history, but I can't help thinking, isn't Daffy Duck just a drawing of a duck, not a real duck, not a real Republican? Wouldn't that account for the three fingers, the ability to blow himself up with seven sticks of dynamite at a press briefing and reappear minutes later in the same suit? The whirling head, the walking on ceilings, wouldn't it? Well, you think about it. Until next time, the next edition of Jimmy Clicker's Hollywood Political File, the best with the quickest of the you-know-what, and you've heard it all before, and all brought to you by Newt Oil. If a newt can find a use for it, surely you can, too. And good night.
And welcome back to the 35th annual Jerry Ford Palm Springs Desert Golf Rat Shoot. Well, the big surprise today, as we look up there at the leaderboard, is the sudden surge of presidential candidates among the front runners in the celebrity ranks. For a report on this phenomenon, at the ninth tee is Jack Rodenticus. Jack?
At the ninth tee with Ted Kennedy, sporting that thin mustache transplant, which I think makes him look very much like David Niven. His partner, Lee Trevino, just hit a very beautiful wood shot to the green, and now Kennedy is bending over the ball. There's that preppy backswing of his, so distinct.
The shot's hooking! Oh, over the bridge and into the water! That's really a bad stroke for Mr. Kennedy. He's in trouble now. He'll have to dive for that ball, and he's talking it over with family and friends. He's waving his hand, waving away the advice of a lawyer. It looks like... yes, he will dive for the ball now and call the police in the morning. Ed?
Well, indications right here in the clubhouse are that this could eliminate Kennedy from the hunt. But let's go to Sam Norvegicus at the 16.
Ed, a really big rat has just poked his head out of the tumbleweed just 3 feet from where Ronald Reagan's chip shot lies for a very possible birdie here on the ultra-tough 16th. Reagan has called for a double O-gauge shotgun. That's the one he used in the Deadly Desert MGM 1939, but it's a rather unusual choice here on the 16th. Most pros would have gone after that rat with a knife, but of course Reagan's been in this tournament before, and looks like he overshot with that and wounded his caddy, California Lieutenant Governor Mike Kerb, who was bending over to pick up the ball. That must be painful, and it's going to be tough on the rulemakers here because I don't remember this ever happening before. Of course, I don't seem to remember anything. Ed?
Well, you're right, Sam. Nothing like that has ever happened before. And Breen Prance that the rat was... No. Wait a minute. Let's just go down to Bill Sumatra there on the 17th.
President Jimmy Carter trying to take his tee shot, and he'll have to take it on a dogleg right. This is the first time the president has set foot outside the White House since the many international crises that have dominated his attention. Except, of course, for those short, supervised, well-publicized trips to the bathroom. He's not going to play the shot? That is right. He's walking away from the tee. Must know something we do. Would you look at that? What a gorgeous move. He's smashed a rat flat that was hiding just behind a spectator. Smashed it flat.
Say,
well,
excuse
this
me,
will certainly
excuse
move
me
him
for interrupting,
up.
Yeah. But back here on the ninth, Kennedy just shot an eagle.
Oh, well, that'll get him in trouble with environmentalists.
Yeah, but he used a fully automatic AR-14 on it.
That should be good with the NRA.
Definitely. I think so. So he's
gentlemen,
lost, or
excuse
won.
Me, gentlemen, let's go down to Ben Bland on the 19th.
And it's really bad here. Those six rats that Jerry Brown wouldn't kill, and they got out of his three-piece suit, and look at that. They're taking over the best seats of the bar, and they're telling all of Ronnie Reagan's jokes in advance. This could really...
Sorry to cut in, Ben, but that's all the time we have now. We'll be back tomorrow for the final round of the Jerry Ford Palm Springs Desert Golf Rat Shoot. But now let's join Jim McKay at the disgruntled alternate Olympic site in Boston, Massachusetts.
Jim McKay here, and I must say it's a very angry group of athletes going in circles on the great track here. We'll be right back if you really want to see this right after these messages.
And now, Agent Orange Bug Spray, the bug spray that means business, presents your announcer, Ned Nern.
Well, it is a father walking down the street with a son, and they're
Ned.
Watching these dogs making magic on
Ned,
the sidewalk.
Ned, no, Ned, no, it's... And no, we're what? On. We're on. It's Tire Biter.
Oh, commentary. I'm Ned Nern, and here's George Tire Biter, spoke creature for the Natural Surrealist Party, with an editorial comment.
Thank you.
We can cut it out.
You know, one of the Surrealist Party planks in the 1976 campoon favored the inclusion of none of the above as a viable alternative to whatever candidates might meet the difficult and expensive requirements to get on a state ballot. Indeed, a couple of politicians from the real world joined us in this view and made some news, one by changing his name, a tactic practiced this year by the absurdly clever President Wappler and his wife, First Lady Wappler. However, 1980's brand of surreality has gone us one better. The San Francisco Chronicle, a newspaper which leads the world in typographical errors, recently conducted a poll which indicated that, so far as Northern Californians were concerned, and we know, like wow, really, man, they really are concerned like wow, that the ideal candidate is nobody. 77% of the vote favored not the yippie porker named Nobody, but actually Nobody. Now, I think that's a fine idea. Let us consider using the ballot to eliminate elected offices. I know everyone's supposed to have his own representative in Washington, but imagine the relief in knowing nobody is on the job. Nobody is spending your tax dollars. Nobody is squaring off with the Russians. Nobody doesn't forget to get the spies out of the embassy. Nobody wants to punch an Albert Hall full of holes in Utah or Nevada. Nobody cares if a 14-year-old American swimmer beats the undies off an East German-Australian crawler. And best of all, nobody will run for re-election in 1984. So let's give the voter a chance. Vote yes, no, or nobody. This is George Tirebiter for National Public Radio.
The Tire Biter commentary is brought to you by the Henry Morgan Guaranteed Trust, Substandard Oil of New Delhi, and the Eat Me Insurance Company, who also bring you Shakespeare, The Chronicles. Be sure and watch Part 4 of Henry I, Part 3, on your own tax-deductible educational network.
Really? I love Shakespeare. Have you got a TV in there?
Oh, I have a portable, yeah. Place?
Maybe we should just go and take a look at him.
Well, fine. You want to look at my place? Oh. Well, let me finish the story about the dogs.
Hi-ho, good senior happenstance. What drives thee up on deck?
My stomach's gone off course again, I fear.
What? Like thee not the thrice impressive duck?
A three-time loser. That duck was never meant to be a sailor.
Ah, but now he sails. Ha ha. Come back below, oh bilious happenstance, oh hallowed happenstance now. Hallo, happenstance.
Hallo, hallo, what caps above?
Ah, here our sweet lord, young Edmund, beside himself with spleen. You've spoiled his holy victory o'er the homeless Parmesans by thy green retreat.
Full 20 times I've heard him pick that fight and win.
Oh, hapless happenstance,
My dog is storm and drain.
I hear him rant. I fear our host, the Chinese Captain Jing, cannot understand a word he says.
Luckier than we. I would this mission done, and we would docked on Fremlin's wealthy banks, and I at home in bed.
You'll sleep in bed wet. Edmund, our explosive charge is safe delivered to the bishop's churchy seat.
When double Edmund rests and cattle phlegm, there'll no one sleep.
Storm ho!
The west breaks across the lee!
Lightning starboard boils the sea.
Look you at the darkening of the light!
The moon seems drowned in rain!
All hands on the deck! Decrease the sail! No starch in the sheets! And roll out a barrel!
Those are my barrels! My servants are in those barrels!
Oh, no!
Snatch! What's happened to our righteous speed? Had courage run aground? Must warlike virtue quail before the growing gale? Whose order leaves us beached like mermaids on the rocks? Christ, noble friend, I fear a storm is blowing up our aft. Oh! Oh, fortunate happenstance! Oh, fortunate happenstance! This wind can blow us not but good. Fold not the mast. Captain, put on more sail.
He's mad! Oh, storm and rain, save a barrel for me!
Much ado about nothing! Happen every hour, 12th night. Go away.
Go away? Where? Where do we go but home to phlegm? My noble bishop prays and pays for my return. Sit out this storm. Nay. A great white sail is what we need to clear the next for what's in store to be our lot.
As you like it. Anything you want to. Or what you will.
Now. Crack cracked cheeks, and break wind break. We'll die at sea, or live on land, for history's sake. At least are on dry land, bend, boy.
Oh,
'tis the ghost, odds balls. Evacuate into the morning mist, a dreadful rise. Come not closer, O spirit cold, or I'll spread your seats with me, Lancelot bold.
Arr, put up your pike, Pate. Tis I, Andrew, launch your battle might.
May bottle make you mean? Your gestures put me pants afloat. It's only right. It's only right for you to fill me up again.
You quake and clank and drip with terror. A sorry mess. If fabled King Bernardo really walked, you'd turn to jelly.
If I be jelly, where be me breakfast toast?
Here's toast enough for both of us. Come fill ya.
I will meet the dawn with elbows up.
Bend, boys, bend. Who goes there?
A real ghost. Up upon the battlements.
It seems to float with no more substance than my steamy breath.
List! Chopin, Mozart, it speaks!
No sleeps, it's moistly upon my face, these clammy nights. Long oft I've walked upon these hoary, withering heights in aimless, mindless searching for a man with blunted aim and mauled tights.
Mauled tights? That's good.
Aye. Motley tights, he means, with spots.
Spotted pants! But there's one man that fits in that conscription.
Aye, but one butt in spotted pants.
Edmund!
Edmund?
Edmund?
Not Edmund, Edmund, but rightful Edmund. Happy Edmund. Princely Edmund.
He means drunken Edmund. I know the nook in which he sleeps the night away. I'll get him flat.
I grow cold. I grow cold. Night slips away.
As does thy beard, uncovering blue and ghostly flesh.
Ghostly flesh, rather. Nay, touch me not.
Where is it? Say it to me, man.
Hey, sir, it stands on King Bernardo's crumbling tower, my lord.
You coward! Hand me my sword, Flask Violet!
Oh, what use this steel against a ghost?
A ghost? Me thought you spoke of goats upon the battlement.
Nay! Ghost, my lord!
Well, be he goat or ghost or ghost of goat or both, I have spirits need to goad my spirits on.
Take speed, my lord!
The spook would speak with you. See where he staggers onto the tower's top.
Edmond!
He splashed me out. As it was writ in antique script, this doth pretend deep treachery and muddy secrets to be told.
Edmond!
He beckons!
And stamps his knotted feet upon a slippery stone!
Stamp not, impatient spirits, for I'll not cancel thee!
Take care, master, that he lead thee not to L.
L? L? What's L? They tore it down! What's L to me or me to L? What then? As a tot was told me not to cross the moat, but then the monkey did bespeak me cast the moat from mine own eyes. So thus I crossed my eyes and double-crossed the monk who fell into the moat. Then soon they bade me warning I play not by myself. 'Twill make me blind, but I was deaf. And so I jumped through the burning bush, and lo, although consumed, I rose again to bite another apple on yet another eve. I spit out half a steak, afraid of hell. I've left my senses many times and dreamed I fought great monsters, pink behemoth, rats upon my bed. Who cares? Are we not men if we fall? Can we not rise again? Hot-headed, lashed with blood, we'll get it taking down, we'll stand it up, we'll get it any way we can. Saint Mickey, save me!
Shut up, Edmond!
You see, he knows me. I go for Grid, for Goofy, and Saint Walt. Have at you!
Aye, spry fool.
Barefoot, sir? No, bry fool. Say you, after all, he is a prince, the minstrel sing.
Among men, yes. Among fools, he is a
This is Rip Reed with news of the campaign. From the API, Duck stays in race, Miami, Florida. Republican presidential hopeful Daffy Duck of California, whose primary showings have thus far ranged from dismal to awful, announced from his southern state's headquarters here today that he is prepared to pour money on top of money to win the political battle in the South. Duck feels he has a fighting chance against fellow Californian Ronald Reagan because old Daffy Duck cartoons far and away outplay old Ronald Reagan movies on southern television stations and cable networks. Duck, who now admits that he is 74, appeared before TV news crews today without any of the unfortunate mishaps that have characterized recent press events. The candidate, who appeared heavily sedated, was flanked by two burly men in white jackets, whom Duck later identified as Whitey and Doc, two poker-playing buddies from his salad days at Warner Brothers Studios in Hollywood. Video cameras whirred and flash bulbs popped as Duck was searched by Dade County Sheriff's deputies for the now-famous sticks of dynamite that put the candidate on the front pages in New Hampshire some weeks ago.
Here's today's federal campaign humor report. Still good for a laugh, Lyndon LaRoche, Robert Dole, and Phil Crane. Lost his sense of humor, Howard Baker. Not so funny as he looked last month, John B. Anderson. Smiling through, Reagan, Carter. Possible last laugh, Jerry Ford. Campaign Humor Report is brought to you by 4-Day, the energy remedy recommended by more than one economist. Try 4-Day your next work week. You'll see it takes less time to do what you're doing less anyway, and you'll be surprised at what you can do with the excess power. 4-Day, from the makers of Odd Even and other proven formulas for fighting that sluggish, out-of-gas feeling. Remember, use only according to presidential advisors on the side of the package. Here's...
All right, Mother, let's one, fill this thing out
two,
now.
Knit three.
We're just
six.
Same as every other American here in
what?
Wisconsin. I'm saying we should fill out our census form right now. So
well, I'm busy.
Just do it. Well, I'll ask you the question.
Trying to knit,
fill them
the,
out.
Trying to knit this TV guide.
No, look, Mother, I've marked in your what? Name and my name here. Now, I want to ask about this, the person in column three. Remember that guy, Jerry Brown, who was staying in their back room?
Oh, the governor.
Yeah, whatever he was for the primary.
For that girlfriend of his, those roller skate marks across my parquet floor.
Oh, I forgot about the girlfriend. Do I have to put her down as a person in column four?
Well, let me take a look.
Oh, yes. And what about that rock and roll group? There was four of them. Do they have to go down in here, too? I haven't got enough room for them.
Let me see. Well, two of them were Mexican-Hispanic.
Oh,
one was Puerto Rican.
I don't know.
The other one never woke up, was asleep the whole time.
Well, let's not count him. Then we can fit him in here, see, but I don't know all their years of birth or anything.
Well, here's a question. In column 37 says, how many rooms do you have in the house?
Yeah.
Do we have to include the room we always keep ready for President Carter if he just happens to drop by and say hello?
I think we should.
We should pay
rent on it anyway.
We do, yeah.
And let's see here. Yes. Look at this question here, Mom.
What's that?
How much are you able or willing to pay to keep this report confidential until 2052?
2052? I won't be alive by 2052, even with all this miracle medicine.
Yeah, but what if the word gets out now? That's what we're protecting ourselves.
Let him talk.
Let's sell some of them records that woman left.
I listen to them. It's like somebody screeching in pain.
Fine, that'd come up with a couple of... How much can we come up with?
A couple hundred dollars. A couple.